This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow a standard orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
I say.
You will obey. It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show about the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. I'm the TOS editor for the network, and with me today is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hello.
And once again, we're joined by Larry Nemechek of Star Trek Continues, and Star Trek The Next Generation Companion, and Star Trek The
Stellar Cartography.
Don't forget about The Communicator, either.
Star Trek Communicator.
Oh, you go back to Communicator days. Okay, great.
Yeah.
All things Trekland. There you go.
There you go.
That's my brand, and I'm sticking with it. Yeah. Every time you do your intro, though, I would just want to hover in the background and go do 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 the Lula Bay whatever her name was thing. Yeah. It's I just want you to know what a pile of self restraint it was for me to hold myself back. Anyway, but guys, thanks for having me on. I promise I'm these bags here in the back room. I'm only staying another couple of weeks. I promise not to.
You can stay for as long as you
hang
want.
Hang out too much longer.
No, it's great having you on the show. I've said this before, I think, but it's like you just have so much information that like when you're on the show, I can just, you know, be like, hey, so what do you think about McCoy? And then I can just stop talking,
which is really nice.
It makes our jobs really easy.
You know? Go out, buy a car, come back, and it's
and it's like it's way better than anything that I could say. No one wants to hear me and Drew. You know, they hear us every week.
No. You know, that's let me just stop you right here.
Okay.
Because the cool one of the reasons I like doing, since I don't have my own podcast, and if I did, I would have to have something really unique to it. But the reason I like doing the podcast and doing cons, I don't want to sound wrinkled, but it's like it's just great because there's so much happening. The world moves so much faster. There's so much technology, social media, everybody, you know, the memes and the gossip and the news topics and stuff. And for a time when we don't have active production going, there is so much still happening that it's just cool to hear what you guys think and what you're saying and what's on your mind. And either, oh, yeah, I had never thought about that. Or, oh, that's exactly what I thought. Or, you know what's funny? That's exactly what I thought in 1983, you know, or whatever it is. Or I'd never thought of that. And that's why I love talking to people. And because, you know, at least once or twice a con, somebody throws something totally out of the blue at me. And I go, oh, my God, I'd never, you know, or it's almost like Trek sociology or something. Some of the new waves of it's like man and fan and technology and Trek, and they keep reinventing themselves every 6 months. So no, that's I love hearing what you guys say. Don't ever say that or what you throw at me. It's great.
All right. Well, we appreciate that.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think about McCoy? And now we can leave.
Yeah. Goodbye.
Oh, is that
no?
Wait. Is that the original series?
It is the original series. There's this thing. I know you're the guy who wrote the Star Trek Next Generation Companion, but before that,
he was the one before Pulaski.
The one before? No. Well, yes, technically.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
There was.
Crusher,
I know there
was
Crusher.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Here, I got it. You know, in Encounter at Farpoint, there's that scene where Data is walking down the hallway with that guy with the really old guy makeup on.
Really?
That guy.
Wait,
but younger.
This was in the pilot?
It was in the pilot. Encounter at Farpoint.
Encounter at Farpoint. That's the Next Generation?
Yeah, they made an action figure out of it for some reason, even though he was only in that one scene. The guy's talking. He's talking about, like, something called a Vulcan and other stuff. It's a really weird scene. It's, you can tell that they just added it to pad out the thing since the running time was, you know, that's too weird. Short or whatever.
You know what? I've still got my VHS tape that I watch of that, but I didn't do it the night it was on because I really wasn't into Star Trek then. And years later, I got it. But someone told me later on there were some, like, scenes cut out so they could cram more commercials in. So I guess I never saw that scene.
It might have been that scene. I don't know. But there is a thing. I don't know. But that guy who's in that scene, he was in another show back in the day called Star Trek.
Oh. Star Trek what?
Yeah. It was just called Star Trek. It was really weird, you know? It was like, they were like, that's
but,
enough.
But not the new movie.
They
That's
didn't
different.
Have a thing to put on the end of it?
Yeah, and it wasn't the cartoon one either. Although it could be, like, he was in the cartoon too.
They did a cartoon of it?
They did a cartoon.
Oh, get out.
No, they did. It was weird. It was the 70s, you know.
Was it like Japanese and we never got to see it over here?
No. They showed it here. It was strange.
Okay.
There's a lot more.
It must have been on
to this franchise
than
just the Next
on.
Generation, Larry, yeah. You know? I don't know. You okay. should, like, read up on it or something.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know. I've moved on to my Will Rogers research now, and after I did The Companion, I, you know, that and my OU Sooners stuff, and that just keeps me pretty busy, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
thanks for coming on, Larry.
That was just fascinating, guys. I'm sorry. Get me on the right show next time. We're coming out with the Next Generation Companion in 3D hologram version, and I'm just trying to plug it, and I have no awesome. Clue what you're talking about, so thanks for humiliating me. I have no idea. Did he wear blue too?
Yes,
he did.
Oh, okay, well, some things they got right. Okay, great.
Some things, yes.
Okay.
So anyway,
well, that was a riff that was rather rough, okay?
Rough riff.
No, guys, I have a T-shirt when we used to iron on letters for T-shirts that no one thought was funny, but I did, that said, I am not DeForest Kelly from college. So, you know, with my beard and everything. So, no, I, yeah. Don't
You're
be
not
fooled
DeForest
by
Kelly,
any
but
of
you
the
play
pattern.
Him on
yeah.
TV.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. I used to be a bad guy in Westerns, and I, yeah. Yeah, no, McCoy and DeForest Kelly. That's just, yeah, it's like so many things in my life. It's like I go for the underdog, or I go for the thing I don't think is getting its fair share of attention. And, you know, it's like you get sucked into Star Trek first and the whole thing is cool. And you get over the fact that, oh my God, the stuff they did yesterday kind of still makes sense today. And, oh, that thing is the same. And, oh, and okay, and this is that. And, oh, my God, did you notice the colors of the shirts match the patch? Oh, my God. You know, when you get past that and then you start wanting stuff that you go, why does everything have Kirk, Spock, and the ship on it? Everything has Kirk, Spock, and the ship on it. What about McCoy? What about Scotty? And that's when I kind of – and then I was like, you know what? I like McCoy better than – okay, so they're the lead guys and they're the heroes and they're full of themselves. Well, McCoy is the one that pops the bubbles and brings them back down to earth. And Scotty's kind of the same way, except he gets to drink. So, you know, and has the Scottish accent. But no, I mean, that's really kind of
drink,
where my.
And then he gets a Southern accent. It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Only
yeah.
when he's drinking.
Not near as often, though. Not near as often. And only when there's spores involved, you know, but that's okay. Only when it's, you know. No, I mean, and then after a while, you start realizing all the McCoy, you know, McCoy. By the time the movies came out, I was way full into McCoy mode. But then it was fun as the movies came out, that McCoy got all the best lines.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who, you know, was exposed to the movies first, I was a McCoy fan. I don't know if he was my favorite
now that's
character.
That's a parallel universe, but that I've gotten my head used to how people have all come to Trek over the years. But,
yeah, I know.
But,
we went through the movies first. It was crazy.
Yeah, it is weird, but because of that, yeah, like you're saying, he has all the best lines. I mean, his stuff in you know, Star Trek V and Star Trek VI in particular, it's like. That's amazing, you know, and it's like, I want to be McCoy because he's the funny one, you know, he's the cool one. He is the one who's grounded. He's the human one next to, you know, Spock, who's not. And yeah.
Yeah, no pun intended. Well, halfway anyway.
No, I mean, it's true. That's what it was, you know. But Yeah, so I can totally see where you're coming from with your McCoy love.
Well, and I guess, you know, I was kidding earlier, but I am a big Will Rogers fan, and a lot of things have kind of occurred to me over the years, and one of them is that a lot of the things I like about Will Rogers is a lot of the same qualities that Dee had and McCoy had, and Terry Rio that wrote the biography finally on DeForest Kelley after he died, but with Carolyn's, his wife's, you know, cooperation, she kind of pointed that out too. She said, you know, there's a lot of things, I can see where you'd be a big fan of McCoy / Dee Kelley and Will Rogers. And I was like, oh, you're right. I never thought of that before, but yeah, you're right. But that's where it started. It started because McCoy was the one that would say, you know, oh, shut up and, you know, shut up, Spock, we're rescuing you, you know, and, mm-hmm. and just kind of cut through the bull. And the parodies did it too. There was a, one of the we were laughing about that too, but one of the parodies, like on Dr. Demento, God love him, because you got that kind of stuff then. I think there was a long form one called Star Trip, and the Kirk jerk captain says, "Oh, be quiet, Mr. Spock. We're out here, and this is where we are." And you know, it's like all this grandiose stuff, and it's kind of like, yeah. And McCoy is the one that can, you know, kind of pop the bubble and bring everybody back down to earth. And people love some of the longs, you know. Jim, they say in this galaxy there's a million billion, you know, and people love to point at that one. And okay, fine, but just the ones where he's bringing people back down to earth. And this is Star Trek Continues, and the fact that I played McCoy a couple of times. But one of the things I found out about McCoy and myself, my own appreciation after all these years of saying I was a McCoy fan and all this stuff. I mean, I know the joke is McCoy is the Grouch, and, you know, and I'm a doctor, not a fill-in-the-blank, and he's dead, Jim, and all the wonderful memes, but the grouchy side of McCoy, and I know it's a joke and a meme, and people, you know, shut up, Spock, we're rescuing, and all that stuff, but you pointy-eared hobgoblin, you know, and you green-blooded son of a bitch, and all that stuff, but it was like that's McCoy at the extreme, and it didn't dawn on me that a lot of people who are Kirk or Spock or whatever fans, when they look at McCoy, they see that sharper edge of him. And that was never my way of looking at McCoy was he was this Southern guy who was the doctor and he was the conscience, but he was the fun-loving guy and he was the cynic. And I dragged this out. I've got the original writer's guide here, but they talk about him being the H.L. Mencken, you know, kind of a harder-edged Will Rogers. But he's the one that – he's the cynic and brings people back down to earth and asks the question that pops the bubble. And – but as far as him being like the grouch and the curmudgeon, I never saw him as that hard-edged, and a lot of people did. And I think the first time I played him in Pilgrim of Eternity and Continues, I was so busy not trying not to be my party impersonation of McCoy that it did kind of come off a little soft. And I was like, oh. And my coach was kind of like, oh, maybe you should put a little bit of the hard edge back into him. And so there was just a couple of scenes from McCoy in the second one. So, you know, I tried to make sure and do that. But the whole issue kind of came up of how we see all the characters. You know, different people have different perspectives. And, people still write character things in the fanzines and magazines and now online. And, you know, character analysis and stuff. But that always got me when people would see him so hard-edged, but very tender-hearted still and, you know, giving. But I don't know. That's just maybe you guys have a different take. But that's... I've started trying to go back and appreciate the darker side of McCoy. Not even the harder edge, like the easy to parody one, but just the darker side. Like here's a guy that's a doctor, and aren't all doctors kind of masochists because they try to save everybody and they're going to lose some, and you know some of the psychology of that. And then what's been given to us over the years is I knew he was divorced and he had the daughter that we never got to see except she got mentioned in the animateds, and then Five, love it or hate it or whatever. The thing about him having to let his dad die and then finding a cure a couple years later or whatever. So, you know, that darker side. I'm gonna do a sit down on McCoy myself sometime and go back and watch for the darker side. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, it sounds pretty solid to me. What do you think, Drew?
I could see I'm getting tired of all the – I mean, I like the focus on the original series that like the merchandising and stuff is bringing – but I am getting tired of the memes and such. And yeah, I do feel that McCoy may be misrepresented as being the curmudgeon. I mean, a lot of his best stuff is the lighter things when he's just like, Jim, you know, we probably shouldn't do this.
Mm-hmm.
instead of the grumble, grumble, grumble.
Yeah.
Though also, I also like the grumble grumbles. Like some of my favorite McCoy stuff is Star Trek IV when he's in the hospital.
Yes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's like all
yeah.
the your damn, like the damn medievalism.
Yeah, yeah.
Throwing stuff around.
Which is a throwback to the stuff in City Adventure Forever. You know, mm-hmm. sewing right. him up with catgut and, you know, all that kind of stuff, which was a nice throwback. But that's, but then I guess if you're going to talk about McCoy, well, one thing I was going to say was the whole fact that Dee was playing McCoy was such a weird thing because of all the different pilots and, you know, all the iterations that Gene had to go through to the hoops to jump through just to get on the air. And he always wanted Dee, but Dee always played bad guys in Westerns was kind of his stereotypical thing. He did other things, but that was kind of the stereotype in Western movies and TV shows. And all anybody in casting saw was the black-headed bad guy who was kind of slimy and may come on real slick and nice, but winds up throwing a punch at the hero when he's not looking and all that kind of thing. And Gene did a pilot called Police Story, which has nothing to do with what's-her-name's Pepper Anderson years later. But he played, and it had Grace Lee Whitney in it too, but he got Dee cast as the medical lab chief, kind of like Quincy or kind of like all the lab chiefs and all the all the NCISs, you know, kind of thing. And he was Lab Chief Green, but he got him playing a doctor, and it was a sympathetic, you know, obviously a sympathetic role. And he was on film. It was only a half hour and all that. But and then he also wrote this pilot where it was kind of like a cheap knockoff of Perry Mason. It was a half hour where Dee was actually the lead and he was an attorney, and it was based on a real life attorney who would take on crazy, kind of like a real life Perry Mason. And it's kind of droll and it's not the best, and I don't know if it's the best fit for Dee. And the whole time I'm just screaming, this is a cheap knockoff of Perry Mason in a half hour. But he's playing an attorney, and it was like all these things were trying to get him out of the bad guy role. And Gene co-wrote that, and it was a pilot that didn't go, called 333 Montgomery. But when he's casting his, you know, like the original thing here, and I drag this out. So here's the original breakdown format thing for his pitch for The Cage, which, you know, was John Hoyt played Dr. Boyce, right, in The Cage. Mm-hmm. But Gene had wanted Dee to be the ship's doctor. And the description, just a paragraph, says ship's doctor, Philip Boyce, an unlikely space traveler, at the age of 51 – oh, he's ancient. He's worldly, humorously cynical, makes it a point to thoroughly enjoy his own weakness. Captain April's only real confidant, Bones Boyce, considers himself the only realist aboard, measuring each new landing in terms of relative annoyance rather than excitement. So he's got that curmudgeon thing going. Of course, there's nothing, you know, Spock is the number five character here kind of thing, so it's none of the Spock McCoy stuff is happening. But as far as being the one guy the captain can turn to and lay it, you know, like you see in The Cage where he walks in with the – and they have the banner as he makes the martinis kind of a thing. And then when they're in the briefing room and Boyce is saying, now let's get the sense of that. These things can look into our minds. And, you know, the couple of real character moments that Boyce has, you kind of see proto, you know, you see baby McCoy things there. And then when they do the second pilot and they recast everything, it's like casting still, they're thinking like Doc from, they're thinking of Gunsmoke and the ensemble, and they're thinking of Milburn Stone's, you know, Doc, where he's like, here's the young lead, and then hits the elderly doctor as kind of like the father figure to him. And that's what they, like these first two pilots, what's his name playing Dr. Piper is the same way. It just comes off as weak and, you know, God bless him, kind of out of shape, and he's not going to be in on any of the action if they need him to be. So, A, it was a victory for Gene to even get Dee cast. But then, you know, it's 60s TV, so it's lead, second banana, and all the other people. You know, the ensemble didn't come in until Bochco and L.A. Law and Hill Street Blues kind of shook everything up. So it's 60s TV structure, but still, as the show goes along, Jimmy and, I mean, all of them did a great job of making their characters rise up to where people thought of them as a family anyway. But here's Dee making McCoy spark on screen, this B-actor, cowboy, Western bad guy, to where you can't help but, they, you know, and Gene Coon picked up on it, especially, and started writing the McCoy Spock stuff and giving McCoy the catch lines, not to overdo it. And by the end of the year, they've decided to bump him up. You know, while they're in the middle of the whole Shatner Nimoy, who's going to get, who's the lead? Are we co-leads? Is Nimoy going to leave? Are they going to recast Spock? Are they going to bring in Mark Leonard or somebody, you know, Lawrence Montaigne to be the new Spock? Are we going to rename the character? Blah, blah, blah. In the middle of all that drama, they've decided to bump D up to third billing out front above the line so he gets residuals, you know, and everybody else who are the regulars are still in the back listing. So it's, you can talk about it. It's a little bit like, you know, oh, John Wayne played himself all the time. Some of these actors who are famous and beloved and people don't think of them as great actors, and D probably wouldn't either. But they did something and really settled in, and he did something on screen those first, you know, as the show went along and he got used a lot because he wasn't in every episode. And that's something that's important to remember about McCoy. And then by the time that's why I really like the second season the best, because all the mature shows are in there. And so you were talking about scenes, so you guys should talk about your scenes, but here's my two or three. My reason Doomsday Machine's my favorite show, and even though D's only in half, McCoy's only in the first half, but partly the scene when they revive Decker, but the scene with Spock and Decker at the chair when they're trying to relieve him, and McCoy's going out on a limb, you know, the "I'll certify that right now" stuff. You know, "Spock, do something!" All that stuff is just, and it's the best McCoy go to hell look. There's the sharp edge of McCoy when he leaves, when Dicker, you know, sends him off finally and he has to give up. That one and the scene in Sitting on the Edge, which is the end of first season when he's on the cot and recovering. And I love that scene where, you know, it winds up with my dear, I don't believe in you either. That whole little scene with Edith Keeler. You know, and the stuff in Journey to Babel, even though I love Journey to Babel for a lot of different reasons. But, you know, that hurts worse than the sling, and talking about hating to wear the dress uniform and then doing the surgery. And he says, "Blood, blood." And then McCoy humor when they're talking about blood and doing the transfusion. And he says, "Well, my blood is extremely rare. And he says, "Oh, what type is it?" And he says, it's a T negative, doctor. And McCoy goes, "Yes, I'd say that's rare," because it's the joke with everybody on 1967 watching the show, because it's obviously an alien blood type. So, you know, those kinds of things. But those are some of my favorite, you know. There's many, many more. You know, at the end of Journey to Babel, the whole, you know, "Well, what do you know? I finally got the last word." I mean, that's just quintessential. That's the scene they ended his, when he had his memorial, when Dee died, and they had a remembrance service on the lot, they put together a 10-minute, like a 12-minute clip reel that had his first movie and his film noir and a lot of his Western scenes and then all of his Star Trek stuff and, you know, 6 or 8 scenes from Star Trek. And they ended the whole thing with – they went through the movies and then they came back to that scene to end with, "What do you know? I finally got the last word." So It's obscene. But, what do you guys think? I'm skipping through here to stop talking and and take a breath and let you guys take your show back. But what's your scenes?
True. I have to go like him and Galileo 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think Galileo 7 is stand-up episode for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I like the whole thing about having McCoy and Spock down on the planet. So McCoy gets to be the conscience. It's not like the id, superego, ego thing. It's just McCoy being the conscience for Spock, just mm-hmm. Spock alone. And I've always liked that.
I love when they're inside when they're at the beginning and then at the end, they literally have McCoy in Spock's ear. He's sitting like right behind him as the pilot. It's kind of like he's the parrot perched on his shoulder, you know, chirping at him, really. I mean, and then when they shoot the angle, it's Spock sitting in the thing and then McCoy's like right behind him. You know what I'm saying? It's like He's right there in the front row where he can like harp at, he can comment at what Spock's doing and throw stuff back at him.
And I like all this stuff, like I said, in the hospital in Star Trek IV. Just, I love him running around, curing, like, growing that lady a new kidney. "Doctor gave me a pill and I got a new kidney."
No, that's great, yeah. And I think we were saying on the other side of the room that the scene, McCoy's big spotlight there was that scene with Chekhov when they throw and Kirk throws the doctors in the closet. But he's ranting on and on like he does in Sitting on the Edge when he's out of it and the the rat, the little bum, takes his phaser and off of him and shoots himself. But before that, he's going on about back in the 20th century when they sewed people up with catgut and sutures and knives. And, you know, he's going on. It's that same vibe that you get in Four. It's a thing of how the movies could have been so much worse than they were, but they were really done with, you know, Harv Bennett's team and Nick Meyer really did a good job of doing, even though they weren't around in the 60s, it shows that if you're smart enough and you do your research, you can come to something later on and, you know what I'm saying? And make it ring.
Even more than that, you know, which is sort of like just, you know, kind of like playing off of the thing. And they did with in the motion picture where it's like, he doesn't want to come up. He doesn't want to beam up. He said something about you scattering it. I mean, to me, like the big thing that they did and the reason why, you know, he works so well in the movies, even when he doesn't have those big moments is because the movie team totally understood the dynamic. So like to me, some of my favorite McCoy scenes are actually things like just when they're you know, sitting around Kirk's quarters or whatever discussing, like, Genesis, you know? And he's like, watch out, you know? Now we'll do it for you in 6 minutes, you know, like, things like that. And it's like, not only is that, like, great McCoy in terms of, like, dialogue and stuff, but it's a great use of McCoy in terms of the story and in terms of, you know, Kirk's character and stuff like that. And, I mean, things like that are things that I personally love. I mean, I think, Drew, you're right. I mean, the Star Trek IV stuff, like that little, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 minute scene where it's just like McCoy full throttle, you know? I mean, it's
yeah, he's on his turf, and this is his, right. And now he's in command, basically. It's like whenever they're in sick bay, and he's, unless there's something going on that's high level command that Kirk's got, like Kirk and Khan or something going on. Right. Oh, the scene with, when with McCoy comes, yeah, with the knife. Yeah. You're in sick bay holding a knife at your doctor's throat. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great scene.
That's a great scene, too. And, one of the little McCoy moments that I love, there's like everybody has their lines, like you just say, like in normal life when the situation comes up and you just say them.
Yes. Yes.
And one of my favorite ones is from the beginning of, and sometimes it's not even about the original scene or the line. It's just that it's just like life happens and you just feel compelled to spit it out, you know?
Yes.
And one of my constant ones or over the years favorite ones has been if somebody's they're either like they're about to say something or you're waiting on them to comment or you're waiting on them to give you some information and you're looking at them. I do this with my wife all the time. She's going to say something and I'm looking at her and she doesn't say anything and I'm like, instead of just saying yes, like yes, you're about to say. Instead, I'll look at her and say, "You were about to make a medical comment, Jim," from sitting on the edge. And another one is not McCoy, but another one like that is somebody's talking about how you can't get something done, or it's way too big, or it's beyond us to do this, or something. And somebody says it, and I'll say, "It's a big galaxy, Mr. Scott." You know, like when they're looking for the galaxy. Anyway, but that one line, and then of McCoy's. But my other just line for line that I love of McCoy's that I use it some way, sometimes that way. It's and it wasn't in the script. This was a movie, and they added it because McCoy. I mean, D as the actor. Was exactly like McCoy, the character. But it's a time when he and Kirk are leaving the bridge. I want to say it's in Wrath of Khan, maybe when they're beaming down. But it's Kirk and McCoy are going into the turbo lift, and Spock is left behind. He has the Khan, and Spock turns around and says, "Jim, be careful." And McCoy's standing right. It's like, what am I, a chop liver? And he says, but it's like, "Jim, be careful." And before Kirk can say anything, McCoy kind of leans in and says, "We will." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it wasn't written that way. It was just, "Jim, be careful." And D said, "I think McCoy should say, 'We will.'" And they were all like, yes. And it's like, and it should have been written there to begin with, you know, kind of a thing. It was like, it was a weird little meta moment, you know. When I read that, I was like, well, that's perfect. And they all said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, it'll work. It's totally cool." But there's a case of, you know, life imitating art and vice versa. But I love that line, "We will." It's like, don't leave me out too, you know.
Another one of my favorite lines that I used to quote even as a kid was "My God, man, drilling holes in his head is not the answer."
the one that I use all the time and have since I was a kid was, "I'd pay real money if he'd shut up."
Yeah, that's another one of my favorites.
And see, that
doesn't make much sense in the real world, but that's okay. It doesn't matter.
I know. And I you say that and I laugh, and now I'm trying to What is that from? Is that from Six?
Yeah, when Christopher
Chang
Plummer
is just quoting.
Yeah, that's right.
Shakespeare,
when you're spewing
for no
Shakespeare,
reason.
Yeah. And that's why it doesn't. And that's why. I mean, I've only seen that one probably 15 times versus 5,000 for anything in the series.
Well, there's, you did a commentary on it, Larry.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's this amazing moment in Star Trek VI when the Klingons beam away, and you know they sort of like all exhale. You know that moment when they're in the transporter room. And if you just watch it, right, there's this moment where after everyone says their lines and it gets to like the point where like Bones is going to say like, I'm going to go find a pot of black coffee. And he like rips open his tunic, right?
Yeah.
Like if you watch it, if you're just like watching him, you can see that he's like carefully undoing it and sort of like trying to buy time so that he can rip it open for like just the proper effect at just the right moment. That's
without ripping the actual costume.
Yes. It's a pretty great moment.
Down. Yeah. Well, have you ever seen the original version of that? It was meant to make them look really. It was meant to look like they had a lot more racist feelings about Klingons. They talk about them smelling and the food they ate, and it was supposed to be like a throwback retro thing about eating with some other ethnic, like some, you know, Asian or African or Arabic. Some white, you know, great white hunter kind of thing encountering somebody else, and you're trying to smile through your dinner, but then you come away and you go, oh my God, they stunk and they blah, blah, blah. And they were trying to apply that. But it just looked horrible because you were supposed to have these enlightened Starfleet guys, and they're just like, no, they wouldn't say. I mean, they cut a lot of it. But it was, they were trying to make the thing about here's the great cultural divide between them, and here's, you know, just in case you had forgotten, here's how far apart they really were, kind of a thing. And instead of it being like the metaphor of the Americans and Russians, it was like, even, you know, at least the Russians drive cars and live in buildings with roofs kind of things. I mean, it was like, it was, yeah,
Star Trek VI, you could tell they were kind of walking that fine line throughout. And yeah, I think the balance that they found worked pretty well.
Yeah, but you're right. And McCoy got to do nothing but blossom. And even though three gets overlooked sometimes. People think of 2 and 4 and 6 and they fall into the odd number meme and all that stuff, but you know, bad movie meme. But 3, for D and for McCoy is tons, because he's carrying around the Cotra and he has all the scenes in the bar and the guy, you know, chasing him and all that stuff, you know. And how can it be sedate?
How can you be deaf with
ears
like
that?
He's also got, you know, that great dramatic scene with Kirk when he blows up the Enterprise, you know.
Oh, well, I was going to say he's got the dramatic scene where he's looking down at Spock.
Ah, who cares about Spock? But the Enterprise, when the Enterprise blows up, you know, and he's like, my God, Bones, what have I done, you know? I mean, that's a great Bones moment right there.
Yeah. I mean, I thought of that moment when he and Spock are talking for two things. One, that was also a scene that they put in his memorial reel that they showed for his service. But two, that was a time, like that was like a rare time, because Nimoy's directing, right? And it's at the end of the show where he hasn't been in the end of the movie, and Spock hasn't been in there the whole time. So Nimoy's had a free ride of not having to wear a costume or ears or anything. He's just got to direct until the very end. But that was one of the times when Shatner was like, it was like McCoy talking to Spock, and it was like their little moment together after this whole thing had happened. And McCoy had carried him around his head and almost driven him crazy, and that was part of the plot of it. And Kirk had been the action guy and got him saved and all that, but this was kind of like a mind-to-mind in a weird little McCoy-Spock moment like you've never seen before, you know? And Shatner was saying, don't you think I should be like behind Bones, kind of like watching them have this moment? And Dee and Nimoy were like, no. Kirk does not have to be in every scene. Like, let them have this moment together, because they've shared brains. You know, they've shared minds, and you know, here they've had they've loved each other, but they've bantered and closer than you can ever be with anybody. And anyway, it was like Shatner trying to say, "Don't you? I think it'd be very powerful if Kirk was listening to McCoy say this to Spock, and it would be such a revelation." And they're like, "No, you don't have to be in this scene." And anyway.
You know, they completely made the right choice, but if Shatner hadn't tried to make his case for that scene, then he wouldn't be Shatner.
Of course. Of course. Of course.
And Shatner's the best.
Yeah. It would. No, I'm just saying it's so Shatner.
It's a very Shatner thing.
It's a very Shatner thing to do. And I just remember hearing that.
Is a great story. Yeah. That's perfect.
But yeah.
So if it had been in Star Trek V, that's how it would have been.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Yep. Your revered Admiral Nagura, sir. Yeah. I became a McCoy fan, kind of feeling like I had to pick up for him. And then the rest has happened. But you know, when everybody else had their Kirk shirt or their Spock shirt, like the first uniform I had my mom make me was a McCoy uniform, of course. You know? And I was mad because you couldn't get a medikit, so I like made my own prop building thing and anyway. But what got me was the last 4 or 5 years, we've talked about the same way that Netflix and the Blu-rays promotion and publicity and attention, all this stuff has made, brought in a lot of fans, and a lot of people have come over from the JJ movies, and now they're bigger fans of the original than they ever were of the movies, or maybe they found them on their own and didn't even come to fandom through the JJ movies. And the same way that it didn't get a lot of respect and attention at the time because it was so hard to watch, but DS9 has way more fans now, I think, and respect than it did when it was on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Even though fandom as a whole has gotten bigger. Okay, so these things that have kind of evolved in maybe interesting, surprising ways, I always just got used to the idea that, I love all the characters, but it was that kind of stick up for the underdog thing. And it wasn't like I did it just because of that, because I love McCoy and I loved him for all the ways I've said 19 times. But there was also that kind of, it's like when you're the only guy watching a show and you and your five friends, and then it gets really suddenly hugely popular and you liked it better when it was just your little show, even though it meant that it might have been canceled, kind of a thing. And I've just noticed the last 4 or 5 years that I think there's been a whole a McCoy, I don't say McCoy awakening. And Scotty's always been kind of funny because anybody that anybody that liked to drink and party has always been like a Scotty, guy at heart, So it's like and Nichelle and Uhura and George has his own thing. And it's like all the little five, quote unquote, have their pluses and minuses. And they've gone way beyond just being the guys, the recurring people who were in the back end of the credits on the original series in the 60s way of doing things. But it's really like McCoy was just kind of like the one everybody liked. And Dee Kelly was the actor that everybody got along with. And when I was a kid, I just kind of intrinsically knew that of all those actors, he would be the one that I would want to have dinner with or share time with as a person. Whether it was because maybe I thought I'd be blown away by the other ones or they would be too, actor. And Dee was like approachable, I guess is what I'm saying. And he was always that way on stage. And of course, he and Carolyn had to like look out, and they were very private and they kind of look out for their privacy, and they didn't have kids. So it was just them. And they made, they only let a few people, if you're reading the stuff about him, they only let a few people into their lives, privately. But that was just always the way I felt about him. And the last 4 or 5 years, I've gotten this sense that it's like McCoy fans have come out of the closet in a way. And it really hit me. It was really funny when we first did Continues and I showed up, and it's like all the girls that were anime fans of Vix that were working on crew and had come from around the, I say all the girls, like there were 40 of them. But I walk in the door and I don't know anybody but maybe two people. And so I'm meeting people and everything everybody does. And person after person, and most of them tended to be, young women in their like college age and a little above, who was most of our crew, everybody kept saying, "Oh, McCoy's my favorite character." And I'm like, that's really sweet, but don't say that just because I'm standing here. And they're like, "No, McCoy is really my favorite character." And I'm like, "Really?" They're like, "Why?" And so they start rattling off all the reasons why. And I'm like, "Well, that's very cool. Okay." And then the next one I run into says the same thing. I'm like, "No, wait. You guys like aren't cloned, right? You're not, and you're not saying that just because I'm standing here. No. Okay." And it was really weird. And then people would like wear their McCoy t-shirts on crew, or they'd wear their McCoy stuff. And there's one picture I've got with Alex who was in costuming, and she has her D thing, and I got down on my knees, so I was like even with the face on her shirt, and we had fun. There's a picture floating. But it was like, what, did I find the secret McCoy to Forest Kelly fan club all these years, you know? And why weren't the 20-something girls in that club when I was in my 20s? Like, where were you guys when I was? But it was just really, but it got me really thinking about it. It's like, has there been this, like, of all these evolutions, like I said, it's like there's trends and things, and it's like Doug says about Enterprise fans, the new fans that have come along now don't know they were supposed to hate the show that they would like when it was on the air. But it's like all these new things that do happen, and it's like there's been this, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you guys think about that, but I've noticed more people. And again, when we did the show and people would come up at conventions and the opening, and people come up and say, McCoy was my favorite character and you were so beautiful and it was such a wonderful show and I loved it. And I'm like, okay, that's very sweet. And thank you for saying that. And I'm not getting an Oscar next year or anything, but that's very sweet of you to say that. But for them to just say, and they're not telling me just because I'm standing there. I mean, people, it's like, where have all these McCoy fans been over the years? They're sure not buying, you know, it's like, it's really funny. And it's like the longest time that there's a picture that I have of me and Dee together at the Huntsville 96 30th anniversary convention. And I had gotten to meet him a couple times professionally, but not near as many as I wanted to. And that was the only time I really did a real, I mean, I had interviewed him on press things and some things. And that was before I was doing Communicator, but that was the time we did a really, really long time thing. And by then he knew that I was, like, Janet worked on Voyager and we were around and all this stuff. And I made one big, because everybody else had done their biographies, and I did one big pitch, and my book had been out, you know, the Next Gen book had been out. And I said, I looked at him after we did our interview, and I said, now, Dee, I have to tell you. I said, if you didn't know this, you are, of all the original series, you're my, McCoy's my favorite character, and you're my favorite actor. I just wanted to say that. And he looked at me, and he smiles, and he goes, well, where were you 30 years ago? You know, but, and then I made, and I was like, and you, I said, you have got to do something. He says, please let me work with you, and let's work on your biography. And he said, he says, oh, if I did that, I'd just have to go out in the garage and go through all those boxes. And that was his, like, kind of laughing, quiet way of saying, like, don't pester me about it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I found out that Carolyn had already talked to Terry about it. But I just, again, it was like everybody else has done their autobiography, and you're the only one that hadn't. It was like, come on, this isn't fair. So, you know, he was getting it, they were getting it set up to be done. But, you know, again, he was the last one to have a bio done. So anyway, yeah. So it's like, it was just kind of funny. He was totally contented and happy with where he was and a mate. Cause when he got McCoy, he thought he was on the down. He was, you know, in his late 40s or whatever. He thought he'd been acting for 20 years. He thought he was over the hill. He wouldn't be actively working after that. And Star Trek gave him such a second breath on acting and all the thing, you know, just income and, ooh, I've got insurance and, you know, all those kind, I can pay my mortgage and all those kinds of things that he was, you know, so eternal. That's why he did the McCoy in the pilot for Next Gen for, not for free, but he did it for scale for Gene.
Yeah.
So, you know, he was just so thrilled for Star Trek and to give him that part of life when he thought his life and acting career would be tailing off and he'd just be sitting around trying to live on his, what little, you know, they didn't have the best residuals in the 60s. That all kind of came along in the 70s. So, not even Star Trek, but the movie stuff. So, he was always very grateful for Star Trek that way and the fandom and the fact that, you know, and he tells that story about the girl that sent him the joint and said, I got high so many times watching you, I thought I'd return the favor. That's one of his favorite fan mail stories. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, McCoy. Have I talked it to death yet?
Good stuff. Well, you can always talk about McCoy.
It's not dead, Jim. We could talk about this forever.
Oh, I think he just killed it. Oh, yeah. No, he is one of my favorites as well. Yeah, you can't not like McCoy.
But do you think there's been like a renaissance of it? That's what I was talking about. Do you think there's been kind of a wave back toward people appreciating him and saying, I'm a McCoy fan, like more than any of the other, especially the original series?
It's interesting because Andy, first time Trek on Twitter, mm-hmm. going through Star Trek for the first mm-hmm. time, she went through TNG.
I'm watching her a little bit, yeah, when I catch it.
Yeah, it's really entertaining. And her favorite character is
that's McCoy. Right. I do remember that. I do remember noticing that. Yeah.
So it's interesting. We're getting, you know, brand new watchers mm-hmm. appreciating McCoy right off the bat. Again, where was she 30 years ago?
Well, I wonder how much of that has to do with people like, you know, like Drew and myself, who are coming at this from the movies first, you know, the younger generation of fans. And it's like there are so many sort of like, you get such concentrated doses of McCoy, you know, in little, you know, spurts like that, as opposed to just spread out over the run of the series, that maybe because of that, maybe because of the movies, people now are fans of McCoy more than back in the day.
Well, do you think maybe it's, and not that this is a peg, because McCoy's got four or five things to him, but maybe the cynical, not jaded, but the cynical wise ass.
That could be. Maybe that wasn't a thing.
It speaks to this generation.
Yeah.
That was kind of a big character type. I just had another Will Rogers flashback, because that was kind of a lot of his persona in his 30s movies was the humble guy, either the down in his luck guy who was smarter than everybody, or the guy who was the sane person while everybody else went off on a tangent in town, or his family went crazy and he was trying to hold them together. And that was kind of Will's character type in a lot of things. And he played, they did a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court version where he was he had the most Southern Yankee version you ever heard. But again, he was the calm one in the middle of the storm, or the guy that was the down to earth person in a lot of his movie roles that way. And even when it was his family or something, and it just, that's another thing, it just hit me. But, the 20s and 30s when you had, especially the 30s when you had an economic upheaval and everything wasn't all bright and shiny, and whatever, and the 60s were a very, you know, we had Vietnam about to tear everybody apart, but Star Trek came out of the Kennedy-esque NASA right stuff, we can do anything optimism, you know, and maybe even by the time they did the movies, much less looking at it with today's eyes, we've gone through a kind of a cynical, jaded time, and maybe that resonates with people too. I don't know. I'm not trying to get too deep here, but this is one of those things where we just kind of, it just came up, and I'm just kind of thinking on my feet and wondering what you guys think, and then you reminded me of what's her first time Trekkie girl, and I remembered seeing that. So yeah, that all kind of adds up to this little percolating theory here. I don't know.
Maybe it's just because now people are seeing Star Trek Continues, and they're like, oh my god, you know.
Yeah. Oh, and they're watching. Yeah, they're watching our McCoy. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that's it. Yes, yes, indeedy.
Yeah, or Carl Urban.
There you go.
Urban. Oh, we didn't even talk about Carl, and he got done so dirty in Into Darkness, among other things. He had the great scene with their Carol Marcus with Alice Eve, where he got to be a little of the Southern gentleman, Southern flirt. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which people forget about with. Oh, here's the funny thing about McCoy. I was glad to see that scene, because otherwise they did nothing with McCoy. That and did the, you know, movie goes along, movie goes along, movie goes along, movie goes along, we're in trouble. Kirk, oh my God, Bones, what are you doing with that tribble? Oh, I'm pulling out the vampire blood that will kill anything. You know, it's like, why is that shoehorned in there, you know, with an obvious tribble?
I wonder.
You know, gee, why did that guy? Anyway, it's like, I'm sorry you had to deliver that line. But the first movie, I mean, him portraying has been wonderful. And the whole thing, what I tried to do, and probably he did much better, was worrying about playing McCoy and channeling McCoy, not impersonating Dee, which is what you would do any of these reboot characters. And I may have even overdid that in the first Continues. But Carl does a great job of that. And I think he even upped his game in the second one, despite what they gave him to play with. My only beef about the first one was it was kind of like they trotted out every token McCoy line to say within 15 minutes there in one span.
Yeah.
But it's like a little, you know, and they didn't do that in the first, it wasn't me. They didn't do that in the first one. There's no he's dead Jim or I'm a doctor, not as in any of the, in either of the two first Continues. So we'll see how the other ones go. But, which I kind of appreciate.
It's just going to be nonstop cliche. Yeah, it's without you there.
Star Trek, the cliche show. The closest thing in episode one that I came and I made sure and really, because the minute I read it, I didn't have to lay anything on. It just came out that way. Is when they're talking about the organ that they come up with the excuse of why Apollo had his power and, you know, the whole thing about that. and they're talking about the organ, and when he took it out, nothing really changed. And he, or they're trying talking about finding it. That's what it is. But he has a line where he says, "Do you have any ideas, Bones?" And McCoy says, "Well, it's damn peculiar, Jim." And that's a very McCoy line to say. It's damn peculiar. So that was like the closest I felt like I got to having a moment and just kind of get in and channel D being McCoy and just let that carry me along, like I'm on a kayak on a runaway river kind of thing, and just let it go however it goes. And
that's a McCoy line right there.
Is what?
Well, just your metaphor there was very McCoyish in nature, but anyway.
The kayak and the river?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Okay, guys, I guess I can't stop, so maybe we better.
You're channeling D without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, there you go. Well, that again, that's how the why does anybody have to be a slave to anybody? That's my proud little bit contribution to, aside from making everybody peaceful about how to deal with the Orion background and then contribute that in. That'll be my creative. Well, I was doing that anyway on all the shows. So there was one moment where somebody said, "Oh, Jay." I guess I don't know if it survived into the script, but I know one time James called me. It's James Kerwin, the director on episode 3. Who, if you haven't seen, if you want some homework before episode 3 comes out, go find "Yesterday Was a Lie" that Chase Masterson is in, and Kipley Brown, and
Peter Mayhew.
And Peter Mayhew, yes. It's a wonderful film. It's not Star Trek, but it's a film noir quantum universes thing. You start off thinking you're watching a 40s show, and then they whip out cell phones. It's in black and white. And then, anyway, it's kind of, but it gets into parallel universes, and it's a real mind bender. And James wrote and directed that, and he's directing this next episode, and wrote and directed the third episode, of which we cannot say the title or talk about it much. But, and now I won't remember why I launched this story. Damn it. Damn it, damn it, damn it. Oh, well. It's a good one. I'll tell you later.
All right.
Save your clock.
To be continued. Yes.
Yeah, to be continued.
And as we established last time, the title of the new episode.
Oh, I know what it was. I know what it was. He called me one day and said, "We're having an argument. Can you ever remember a time when, like, Sulu leaned over and did something for the navigator's console?" And I went, "Well, yeah. All the time." I said, "For one thing, when Bailey conked out in Corbomite maneuver and froze up." And they're like, "Really? Okay." And I'm like, "What? Don't Trek nerd out on me now and forget that. How did you not remember that?" In fact, when they did, when Intermirror Darkly's set was up at the end of Enterprise, and everybody was going over and taking pictures on the bridge, you know, at the lot, Sandy Stone and I from StarTrek.com were over, and everybody's taking pictures, and we were sitting at the helm of navigation, and there was one point where I said, "Sandy, go stupid looking," and he went, "Duh," and I leaned over from Sulu's chair and, you know, and was like doing his controls like Sulu and Bailey, or Sulu when Naked Time is happening, whatever. Anyway, I was like, "Here, I'll send you a thing of us parodying that scene." And he's like, "Oh, okay." I'm like, "How can you be a nerd, the original series nerd, and not remember that?" But anyway, we all have our moments. So aside from that, James is totally qualified to direct the third episode. And...
Cool.
Anyway, guys.
I look forward to seeing Grant Imahara lean over and mash some buttons.
We'll see. I don't know if that survived or not, but I know at one point, that was a place where I saved somebody's bacon, or, you know, solved a bar fight or something there, saved somebody getting injured or something. Played McCoy even without a hypo, even without meaning to. Anyway, guys, thanks for having me on, and I hope
thank you for
cover a lot
for joining
of
us.
Proto McCoy and mid McCoy and post McCoy there
for sure. Yeah, it's been an interesting perspective since we didn't really we didn't get to experience McCoy grow as the character himself grew, you know.
Well, now wait a minute. I didn't either.
At least saw the episodes in chronological order, somewhat,
yeah.
Or at least the episodes.
You
first.
Know, yeah. It's not like you saw Star Trek: The Motion Picture wasn't your first exposure to McCoy.
No.
But thank you again for joining us. We really appreciate it. And where can people find you on the internet and whatnot?
At Larry Nemechek on Twitter, and LarryNemechek.com online, Larry Nemechek's Trekland on Facebook. My Con of Wrath documentary is still going at conofwrath.com. We'll probably have another year or two in our little slow motion pace. Geek Nation tours. We're working on this summer's LA to Vegas Trek Film Sites tour leading into the Vegas convention. So go there. And a lot of the stuff is at my main site. And the thing I forgot to mention the last time I was on the show was the Trekland trunk is still open. And I'm still unloading or sharing scripts and paste-up boards and oddball things and draft scripts and what else? Blueprints and all kinds of oddball things and some gifty-type things. So not retail items, so non-commercial things. So
yeah,
just and cool I don't stuff. Cram it down your throat. So come over. There's a Trekland Trunk Facebook page. So like that, and then when I put something up, you'll hear about it. And they're mostly eBay, but once or twice a week we do one kind of in group chat on Facebook, and people have a hoot with that more than they do anything else. So I've got 8 or 10 or 12 regulars, and then everybody's welcome to jump in. But we have a Ferengi and a Breen and a Borg and who've bit and like little 6-hour session. And anyway, it's kind of wacky.
But the Ferengi always wins, right?
The Ferengi was on a 6-item. spree until he got a late start, but then he had 5 in a row, but then somebody else took it this last time, so.
Oof. He should be ashamed of himself.
I know. I yeah. Well, he lives in Oregon, so, you know, I don't have to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, thanks again. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, Larry.
Sure thing.
It's been fun talking with Larry about Dr. McCoy today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Montgomery Scott.
It's really just there to tell a story that they couldn't tell with Kirk or Spock or McCoy.
This is true. An episode where Kirk is framed for the murder of a hooker would be...
Right. Awesome.
Completely different. It would be awesome, but...
Earl Grey.
Ships of TNG Part 2.
Commander Riker, why would you protect the inferior ship? I want its treasure. I want the other ship.
Darren, how long have you been keeping that one in your pocket?
Yeah,
you
I like
tell
that.
Us.
That was good.
Do a Ferengi.
The Ready Room.
Scientific Method.
She tells the woman that comes on the bridge, and she's like, "Well, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter to me. I'm gonna drive into these stars. It's gonna be great." Like, it's like, I'm just like,
the orb.
Till death do us part.
His are very quizzical in nature. They're of the scientist. They're of the somebody who is willing to accept. Okay, what is this reality? What's going on? She's just all like, tell me what to do right now. You know, like,
right.
She, there's nothing spiritual about her.
To the journey!
One versus doctor's orders.
I was working full-time on top of being a full-time student, and I...
Listen, I don't want to hear your excuses, okay? I don't want to hear them.
Like, life was happening and...
A great man once told me, if something's important to you, you make the time. Warp 5.
Undeveloped Enterprise stories.
But the idea here is that Porthos would become intelligent and would be the only member of the crew capable of communicating with a canine alien. So even Hoshi apparently couldn't figure out this dog language.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
If Bull, Chimera.
I'd love to see an X-Files one-shot with Scully and the hookers.
With, you know? Scully and the Hookers?
Yeah.
That's a great name for a band.
We can call it Scully and the Hookers.
Melodic Treks.
5 musical favorites.
You know, I don't completely hate the opening theme. I just really think that Archer's theme should be the opening credits.
Continuing Mission.
Star Trek Axelar with Alec Peters.
That's what we posit. We say it makes sense that at this point we know it's from TOS. They're not integrated, so our crews are not integrated, and we make a point of that. We don't avoid it. We make a point of it. And in Prelude to Axanar, they talk about that.
Literary Treks.
IDW Alien Spotlight Part 1.
Well, Chris, it's okay because they can see the Romulans from their house.
That's right.
So. From space, you know, you betcha, you know, and that's okay. I can see the Romulans from my starship. It's going to be fine.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and get in on the Daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune, or you can stream from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. If you want to contact us about Dr. McCoy or Larry Nemechek, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using Webcam's microphone, and we can play it right here. And you can talk to us and other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. On social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where else can people find you other than here?
Well, you can find me here still on Trek FM, where I do commentary Trek Stars with my friend Max. And you can also find me on commentarytrackstars.com, where I do commentary Trek Stars off topic with Max and our friend Brandon. And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
And you can find me on Twitter at 005, D-O-U-B-L-E-O-F-I-V-E. And on various other places around the network and the internet, also under that name. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read, but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what do you have for everybody?
Well, I've got a bone story called Star Trek Shadows on the Sun, which is written by Michael Jan Friedman, another comic book writer who is responsible for an obscure run, an obscure comic called Dark Star back in the mid-90s, which captured my imagination as a youth. Mainly because Donna Troy was the main character and she was awesome. It's narrated by James Doohan, and it's 3 hours and 12 minutes long. And it's about, like I said, bones. Dr. McCoy finds himself at the center of an explosive civil war on the planet San.
Alderaan.
Yes. And he is the only one with the power to save the woman who once broke his heart.
Oh,
it seems to be like a recurring theme with him.
He has a lot of exes out there.
Yeah.
And he needs to save them all.
Featuring a dramatic reading by James Doohan and enhanced with sound effects and an original score.
An original score?
It's got an original score.
Cool.
Yeah. And you can get this book for free on audible.com since you listen to Standard Orbit.
That's right. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM.
Hey, can I just throw something out there?
Yeah.
For anyone else who's on audible.com, when you're on the site to sign up, just go and look at Star Trek Best Destiny, which is a book that I remember and is about like old Kirk and young Kirk, and they're doing their things or whatever, and they've got a picture of like a young Kirk on there. Tell me he doesn't look like Justin Bieber. I'm just saying. Maybe that's who they should cast in the new Star Trek movie.
The prequel?
Yeah. He's Canadian. I mean, it makes sense. All right. Anyway.
No, I'm just shaking my
head.
Let's
move on.
No, we're done.
Let's move on. All right.
And there's another way that you can help us keep Standard Orbit in orbit, and that's by donating directly to the site. If you go to trek.fm/donate, you'll find 8 original alien illustrations by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork you see on our site. They're available as both badges and art prints, and they're different combinations for you to choose from. Just let us know which you would like in which format. Again, you'll find them at trek.fm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each week.
They don't have any Sanians yet, though.
Sanians.
Maybe next week.
Alderaanians.
It was spelled S-S-A-N. How do you pronounce that?
I don't know. I suppose like a snake.
Yeah, San. I don't have any of those. Get on that, Tobo Ushi.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.